Novelist Elizabeth Likeness grew up in rural Iowa, and her latest novel brings her and her heroine back home. It's a heartwarming story that's a little bit mystery, a little bit romance. It's The Lost Queen of Crocker County. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. I'll talk with Elizabeth Likeness, then later in the hour we'll move from fiction to a true story that's as unlikely as fiction. When Alejandro Larios Mora was struggling through elementary school in Anaheim, California, he didn't know that someday he would travel to Iowa to become a veterinarian. He also didn't know that he had not been born in the United States. I'll talk with him about the unlikely journey he took to making his dreams come true. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, I'll talk with Alejandro Larios Mora. He's a dreamer in more ways than one. I'll talk with him about growing up and seeking an education as an undocumented immigrant who was brought to the United States as a young child and the incredible obstacles he faced along the way. But first, Elizabeth Likeness grew up in Truesdale, Iowa, a very small town north of Storm Lake. The heroine in her new novel grew up in True City, Iowa. But while there are some similarities, The Lost Queen of Crocker County is definitely a work of fiction. The book is Likeness's fourth novel and was just released this week. She'll be at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City on July 22nd at 4 p.m. She's with me on the line now. Hello, Elizabeth.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, I'm so happy to talk with you.
Well, before we talk about you and your life in Iowa, your relationship to the state, let's talk about Jane Willow. She is the heroine in your new novel. Give me a little bit of background on Jane. Tell me about her.
Well, Jane also is from Iowa, but, you know, her past is quite sordid, and so she actually leaves, and she's been gone a very long time, and so... without spoiling too much of a plot, she finds her way back home from some sad reasons she has to come back. And so she finds herself back sort of in the midst of things she's been trying to run away from for a long time. So, so it's an interesting trip back for her as a grown-up when she eventually returns.
All right. And she's living in Los Angeles. She is a film critic and a very well-known, a very successful film critic. And she's a woman who takes a lot of enjoyment, pleasure in crafting words. And
she does.
Not necessarily in being very kind with those words.
Not necessarily. I'm a fan of an unlikable protagonist. I love to see what will happen to them. I think life is messy and people are messy. And so she was crafted to be fairly unlikable, certainly in the first leg of this journey. But deep down, she's quite something different as you hopefully continue to read. And, you know, she's probably my opposite in many ways. I would never in a million years want to judge or critique or be that person, but she was fun to be. It's fun to be your opposite. It's fun to, on the page, be something that you're not. So in that regard, she was really fun to write.
Well, and you mentioned her past that caused her to flee Iowa and really never look back. Although she maintained a relationship with her parents, she never came home to Iowa. And that past is a secret from everyone, including her parents. No one knows why she disappeared and chose not to come back, except for her.
Yeah, correct. She carries that burden. I always thought throughout the writing of this book that that was quite a burden that she keeps. You know, shame is interesting to me as a writer. It's probably more interesting than any other emotion, guilt and shame, and she has a really healthy dose of it. But I also was really excited in this storyline that you know, where there is that darkness and the guilt and the shame and all of those things that everybody experiences on some level, there's also this hope of redemption and, you know, a second chance. Can we have that second chance once certain things happen to us? And I certainly hope we can, and, you know, she does.
So I mentioned this is not your first novel, although it is the first one that takes place in Iowa. You've been living outside of the state for quite a while yourself. How long have you been gone from Iowa?
I've been here in Nevada. My husband and I teach English here, and so I've been here almost 25 years. So yeah, this is our second home. But you know, the place you grow up in is always, I think of myself as having two homes. Iowa is home, always, will always be home. And then, you know, I have two boys. So where you raise your own children becomes a different home because it's their home. And so, yeah, I have two sort of homes, but we've been here a long time.
What made you decide to set a novel in Iowa?
You know, this is really an interesting journey. This has been so full circle for me. It was about 4 years ago. I didn't think I'd ever write about Iowa, honestly. Every once in a while it would show up in my other books, just somebody would be from Iowa, but not on the scale that this one is. I was driving home one day about 4 years ago from school. I teach middle school, and I'm on my way home. The weirdest thing happened. It was like probably a rock or a pebble or something on the highway just made a noise. And I thought, oh, my gosh, what was that? Did I hit something? And literally, I turned around. I even drove around the residential area because I thought, oh, my gosh, was it you know, and absurd ideas that didn't even make sense. Is it a kitten? Is it a dog? What has happened? And I just felt really awful. And so I couldn't find anything, and I think obviously it was nothing. But on the way home, I had about a 15-minute period of time where I went from, oh, my gosh, what have I done, to what about me immediately makes me think something tragic has happened or I've done something bad. And I just got to thinking about guilt and how we all feel guilt on occasion. And that's when I thought, is that a Midwestern thing? Is that a me thing? And then I just started thinking, huh, I wonder what that is. And this story, literally like a gift, it was rather divine, it just sort of came in flashes. And by the time I got home 15 minutes later, every major twist and scene from this story just took hold. But it got me thinking, you know, am I a Midwesterner out here? And then I thought, well, yeah, I own a lot of crock pots. I bring casseroles to people when they're sad. Yeah. And then I couldn't stop thinking about what that meant to be from the Midwest, certainly from agricultural small town Midwest. And I've been thinking about that a lot for the last few years.
So do you still have family in Iowa?
I do. I have a huge family, so a lot of them have scattered, but I have a brother in Des Moines. My husband's family's still in Des Moines. So we go back every summer, which is important. I want my kids to know what that is, and, you know, what life was like growing up there. So we come back every summer.
All right. So when you decided to set a novel in your home state, which is something you had not been tempted to do before, and then you gave the town a very similar name to the town that you grew up in. How did you approach the idea of creating this place, which is clearly a fictional place? You kind of blend towns. There's a little bit of Eldon, Iowa mixed in there. And I've not been to Truesdale, but I'm guessing there's a little bit of Truesdale in there. How did you approach creating this place that was inspired by a real place?
You know, I don't think I made a conscious effort to say, okay, what's going to be real, what's not going to be real. True City just came to me one day. I certainly didn't, you know, so much of this book is not at all autobiographical, but the setting is. I see everything in my writing always as a movie. I'm a big fan of movies. Of course, this book is a lot about movies. And so everything, I always feel like there's a camera in my head and I see things. So there are places in this book that are absolutely places I recall. A blacktop, a highway, a friend of mine's farm. Those are all places that are real. But True City, I thought, well, it can't be Truesdale. It can't be Elbert City. I went to school in Elbert City. They bust, you know, you get bust a lot around in small town Iowa. Excuse me. And so I just thought, ooh, True City is a perfect melding of Truesdale and Elbert City. And it's got a beautiful metaphor. So I just thought, oh, that's beautiful. She's coming home. She's going to find some truth here. That's going to be perfect. It had a little bit of a fairy tale ring to it. So I went with that. But as far as everything else, Jane, I knew what needed to happen to her. And so really, I just put her in that setting and everything else just sort of came into play naturally.
Well, and you just said this is not autobiographical, although then you just told me that you have some similarities with Jane Willow, who is obsessed with movies, has dedicated her entire adult life to movies. Yeah. And I mean, it's really they guide her in many ways. There, she is a big, big fan of James Bond movies and strangely takes some guidance by what would James Bond do. But there are other movies throughout the book that also influence her and influence the decisions that she makes. So is there some autobiographical source?
Oh, of course. I think every writer, that's the scary question, is when they say, how much of you are in the protagonist? Because she does some bad things. And certainly, any of her shared trauma, I don't have any of her shared trauma, thank goodness. But you don't even know how to separate yourself from a protagonist. It's almost subconscious. So what's funny is I love music and movies, but the first draft of this book, ironically, she was a food critic. And my lovely husband, who's a great editor, he is brutal, but he is wonderful. He reads the draft and he goes, babe, you are not a foodie. She can't be a foodie. That's not your thing. You love music and you love movies. And so it was really quite stilted until that decision was made. And I think I was just trying too hard, and you could see it on the page. You always see research on the page when somebody's kind of forcing something. And so once I took the food critic out of her and thought, oh yeah, film, let's do film. I love film. And then everything just started clicking, and it was really, really great. But I don't think we can even separate what about the protagonist is us and what's not, because it's partly in your subconscious. You can't feel emotions that you don't feel. So, I'm sure her passionate side is definitely, it has a lot in common with myself.
Well, you said something early in our conversation about being her. What is your process when you are coming up with a character, when you're writing a book? Do you role play in a sense? Do you try to, in your mind, become your protagonist?
Well, I think they live, even my former protagonists, I think they always have a spot in your brain. They just stay there. They just kind of live there. I'm the kind of person, when I read a book, that fictional character, sort of, I think about them throughout the day. There's a thing called experiential crossing. Actually, it's a psychological phenomenon where once you put the book down, a lot of people experience this. If you're an avid reader, the characters kind of live in your head for a while, and then you just think about them, like, what would Hermione Granger say to the barista at Starbucks? Like, you just think about what they might do. And nobody ever, of course, verbalizes it. That's ill. But you think about it. And I think for me, my characters are always there. And for Jane, she just kind of lived in my head. And I would think, well, I wouldn't dare say that, but she would. And you think about that throughout the process of the book. But for me, once I have a character in my head, you give them a really big problem. And then you just make it worse and worse and worse until the reader thinks there's no way they're getting out of this. And that's right where you want them to be, where you think it's rock bottom. There's no way they're going to get out of it. And then you find a way.
So in placing the book in Iowa, did you come back and spend time here to try to get back in touch with your roots?
Yes. So we come back every summer. And so, there is something really magical about when you are leaving Nebraska, coming into Iowa, and I'm getting closer and closer, you see the sign that says, Welcome to Iowa. It's really kind of magical to have your kids in the car. And my husband grew up in Des Moines, so we're both from Iowa. And so to bring somebody back and see that was really lovely, because I was in the middle of writing the book. And so, yeah, it was neat to be back. I think there were 3 summers where I was back in Iowa where I was working on this book. And you see everything in it.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Elizabeth Likeness. Her latest book is The Lost Queen of Crocker County. It takes place in Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, I'll talk with Alejandro Larios Mora. He is a dreamer in more ways than one. I'll talk with him about growing up as an undocumented immigrant who was brought to the United States as a very young child, his pursuit of education that eventually brought him to Iowa, where he became a veterinarian. We'll talk about that later on. With me right now is Elizabeth Likeness. She is the author of the new novel, The Lost Queen of Crocker County. It was just released this week. She'll be at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City on July 22nd at 4 p.m. This is her fourth novel, the only one of her novels so far to take place in Iowa. And so it brings her back home. She grew up in Western Iowa. It brings her heroine back home as well. And Elizabeth, let's talk about you. You talked about your love of movies. What was your relationship with books when you were growing up?
Well, I was telling somebody the other day that I was an avid reader, and I would read in our basement, and people out here in Nevada don't have basements. It's a water table thing, right? So in the Midwest, we all have basements, and I remember being in my basement, and of course, you know, half full of water, because that's how it goes, with a dehumidifier running. It's very Iowa. In the middle of the desert, we don't have these things out here. And I just remember I would listen to records, a lot of little records and books on a little player, and I just would do that all day long. And then, you know, you went through the whole detective Trixie Belden and Nancy Drew and all of that. Books are just a beautiful universal language for all of us. And I think that, you know, I tell my students all the time that stories are, I forget who wisely said this, but stories are meant to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. And that's kind of how I always approach books that I love, is I want to be comforted by certain parts of, you know, the human experience, and then, you know, you should probably be afflicted on some level and understand, you know, what it's like to be somebody else from a different place. And so stories were always like that for me. I want to be comforted, but I want to be afflicted. I want to feel alive when I'm reading. And so I think that's probably why I teach English, because I feel like books are the vehicle for so much.
When did you start thinking about becoming a writer yourself?
You know, I don't know if there's a moment where you decide, but I was thinking yesterday that I think there are probably three pretty pivotal moments for me as a writer. One was when I was really little. My brother David was a wrestler, and we would go to these wrestling meets, and they would take place for hours at a time, and I was just bored. And I remember writing a really horrible little silly story about a lonely pumpkin. It was the last pumpkin. Nobody picked it, and I felt bad for it, and it sat there, and I wrote it, and, you know, and rolling around on a dirty bleacher somewhere in Iowa, and I gave it to my mom, and she read it and said, "This is wonderful," as mothers do, thank goodness. And I remember her saying, "You're a storyteller." And I think of that often as a teacher, that it is so important that when you see something that somebody loves to do and might be good at, just to verbalize it and tell them. It might define them forever. It might make a writer of some, might make a mathematician out of somebody. You have to remember to tell them that. And I think that when she did that, nobody ever talked about it. But I think from that point on, I thought of myself as a storyteller. And then I was thinking this morning that I was thinking, what did I write when I was little besides that story? I had a little newspaper in my little tiny town. I mean, it was like 72 people. I wrote a little newspaper, just stuff that was happening in town, and I copied it at my dad's office and got on my banana seat bike, and I delivered it to the, you know, front door of everybody in our town. And so I did little things like that where I was excited to tell stories. And then, of course, in college, Iowa City, good grief, what a writing mecca. It is humbling even to be in that city of writers. And so I remember one of my defining moments as a writer would be standing in Prairie Lights for the very first time, grabbing a book of short stories by Lori Moore, opening it up, looking at the first sentence, and saying, "Oh my gosh, I want to do this. I want to be this person. She's amazing." And that was it. And I really thought that was probably a huge moment for me, standing in that bookstore that I'll be in so full circle in a couple of weeks, which is just crazy to me. I'm really honored to be there. But that was probably a pivotal moment. And then when I came out here and got my master's degree in creative writing, and then I started really putting things together and deciding, yep, I'm going to do this.
Well, along with getting your master's degree in creative writing and pursuing writing, you were also starting a family. Were you also teaching at the same time?
All of it. Yep. All of it. In fact, I really, really wanted to have my first novel come. It came from a short story. I wrote a little tiny 10-page short story that actually turned into my first novel. And I was pregnant at the time, and I thought, you know, I want to do both these things. My family is the most important thing to me in the whole world. But I know if I don't finish this first draft of this novel, I wonder if I'll ever get it done. I wonder if I'll ever do it because, you know, family's going to come first. And so I remember defending my thesis at UNR, being 9 months pregnant, and then trying to finish this novel, and it all started to happen. And I actually wrote my second book on maternity leave with my second child. And for a while, just superstitiously, I thought, gosh, I hope I can write a novel when I'm not gestating, because we're going to have two kids, and that's it. I'm out. So it turns out I can, thank goodness. But there was a time where I thought, oh, my gosh, will I ever be able to squeeze this in? Will I have the creative juice to do this? And that has worked out well. So
when did you start teaching 7th and 8th graders?
I am at the same school I started at. I'm on my 23rd year of teaching 7th and 8th graders at our little middle school here in town. So a couple decades worth of classroom time.
And now teaching English, obviously that can take a number of different forms. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're teaching literature, but it's such an interesting time for readers, those middle school years, because obviously, I mean, some kids are a little resistant to reading, but the ones that really take to literature, it's such an incredibly exciting time of exploration. And what do you observe in your students and their relationship with books?
Oh, there is literally nothing more exciting than especially turning a reader, turning a non-reader into a reader. This is probably my favorite thing, because you can tell the readers that show up, they're voracious. They pick one author. This generation really tends to read series. That is something that is a little bit different from when I grew up. Now it's like they'll get one author and they'll just stick to it.
But, well, there are a lot more series now than there were when we grew up.
And they're fun, and they're, you know, this generation loves dystopic novels. They love it. The darker, they're better. And I, you know, anytime I can get them excited about reading, I am. But, you know, for example, S.E. Hinton's The Outsiders. I have been teaching that book since the first year I taught, and that book makes readers out of non-readers all the time because they have problems. And that's where it comes in, that what I was talking about earlier, where, you know, you want to be comforted yet afflicted in a story. And I think that's what I try to write as well. But that book, I mean, we all read it in seventh grade. I read it in seventh grade. It's still here. It's still there after that many years, 3 decades.
And that's still amazing. Relevant.
Yeah. And she wrote that book when she was like 13 years old. It's amazing. And so, you know, in that sense, it's really fun to have a student say, hey, my mom read this book when she was in seventh grade. And I was like, I know, so did I. And here we are. And we read it together and we go on that journey together. And, you know, I don't know. God bless all teachers. I don't know how a math teacher does it, because in my world, everything, every day, there's emotion. There's, you know, and not that you can't get emotional about math, but I'm a book person. So that journey that we all go through together is really special, because you learn new things about somebody. A teenager is not going to tell you, hey, here's what I think about the world, but they will on the backdrop of a story. They will if you are talking about somebody else, and that's cool.
I'm talking with Elizabeth Likeness. She is the author most recently of The Lost Queen of Crocker County, a novel that takes place in Iowa. And I think about those years. I mean, I was a reader then, but I also have a daughter who's nearly 13, so I watch her as a reader. And I think about all of the things that kids are going through just emotionally, all of the growth, and how incredibly valuable books can be at that time, because it gives them an opportunity to kind of experiment with feeling different things and experiment with, I guess, living vicariously or having these cathartic experiences without putting themselves in danger and without really putting themselves on the line. And I'm curious about your choice in writing. Has it been tempting to write young adult fiction, given that that's the audience that you're spending the most amount of time with? You're seeing them as readers?
You know, I never did. I think that there's something sort of sacred about whatever world you live in. And so for me, I probably would never write about schools. It's so close to me that I don't know, you know, I don't know if I could really write about something that is so big a part of my world. And, you know, I think I started a young adult story that wasn't super great. And I'm not sure it's my wheelhouse. But I'm such a fan of young adult literature that it's so good. They don't need me writing it. It's so great. There's so much to offer kids. And, you know, I was telling my students right before school let out that, you know, even if the books that they read are a little bit dark, there's always light, even in the darkest, always. And so, you know, we read for empathy. I think that's what I usually start with. Day one in my classroom is we read so we can feel empathy about different types of people. And so, you know, stories create empathy. And so you learn about, you know, what's it like to be a marginalized person, what it's like to grow up somewhere different than where we are. And so I think YA does that really well. It might look really dark on the outside, but really the underbelly of it is think outside yourself. And, you know, we don't give this generation enough credit because they're quite empathetic, actually. I find them to be very selfless in lots of ways.
Now, I had a high school English teacher who apparently wrote steamy romance novels under a false name. So we were always searching
for
her books.
Oh, they do. Yeah, you'll never know it. Those guys are sneaky.
But so do your students know about your work? Do they look for your books? Do they read them?
Here's what's cute. I would consider most of what I write not something that any of my students I necessarily should put on their list because it's grown-up fiction. And, you know, and I am, as a parent myself, I certainly tell parents immediately, hey, I'm a writer. This is what I write. They are not young adult novels. Having said that, nothing makes a kid want to read something more than
being
I'm not
told
supposed
not
to read
it, yeah.
Right? And so I'm very careful just to make sure people understand, hey, if this is a book you're going to read and you want to read it with your child, knock yourself out. I do see it show up from time to time, and they'll come up after class, and they'll say, hey, here's it. Because I said, hey, you need a note from your parents. You know, I want everything on the up and up. and so they'll do that, and they'll just look at you, and you can see. Like, I know what they're thinking. Oh, my gosh, that's you. That's a whole different, you know, you can see the writer on the page. We try not to do that, but sometimes you can. And so I know that they probably do, but we really talk about writing in a different way. I want them to bring it back to them. I don't want it to be all about me. So usually when we talk about the process, they're really interested in, gosh, how do you submit and how does it happen? And so I really want to very quickly take it away from me and say, yes, this is something I love. This is a passion of mine, but hey, here's what you can do. And so we talk about the process more. We don't talk about the content of my books. And they know about them and they look it up and they think it's fun and what have you. But I really want them to know, hey, you know, this can happen for you. And so I have a little writing club after school, and that's where we talk about, you should submit, just do it, just be brave, submit this work, let's talk about it, and just throw it out there. And so that's really fun for me to see that some of the budding writers that I have are inspired by just the process, because they, you know, they don't know what to do. I wouldn't have known how to submit something when I was 12. So really, I think we try to keep it to that more than content of my stories.
You are coming back to Iowa for a little bit of a book tour. What is your plan? I know that you're going to be at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City, but are you going to also be reading around the state?
No, I'm for the moment, I'm just going to be at Prairie Lights, which for me is literally just the hugest deal. As I mentioned, that's such a it's such a writing mecca, Iowa City, and that bookstore in particular. I have envisioned this like, oh, wouldn't it be great if someday I could go back to Prairie Lights and do a reading? And so this is just really fantastic and full circle. So at this point, I've done some out here. So I did a reading. I'm going to do a book signing in Reno on this Saturday, and then Prairie Lights when I come back, and then we'll see family. But I am just thrilled, really thrilled to be there.
You mentioned that this book started with you kind of musing about what it means to be a Midwesterner and how growing up in Iowa shaped you and continues to inform your behavior and casserole making. In writing the book, there are a few themes that come around again and again. The parents of the woman, the protagonist in the book, maybe a little bit too good to be true, but they have some mantras that they like to share. And I'm curious, I mean, do you think that you found some of the truths of what you think it means to be Iowan in exploring this book?
Oh, 100%. I'm not kidding. I had not even thought about that distinction. I had never really thought about it. I'm from Iowa. And as I started to explore it, I thought, oh my gosh, and I really had to try to separate, wait, is that just my family? Or is that Iowa? Or is it small town Iowa? And I think it's probably a little bit of all of it. But the truth in the novel just comes out in weird things. I never really gave it a thought like, is it a mantra to say, you know, believe in things? Is it a mantra to, you know, work before you play? And then I thought, well, yeah, that is my truth growing up. But none of these things were not really tangibly accessible in my head before I started writing this, which is why it was really fun to write, because every day there would be something new where I would think, oh, yeah, we trick-or-treated at every single person's house. That's interesting. And they would just flood back, and it was 2 or 3 years of just that happening on a weekly basis. There would be something new that I would recall, and that was really fun.
So what are some of the truths that you feel you found? What do you think Iowans will see of themselves in this novel?
Gosh, it's so hard to say. I would hate to say what they're going to see. And you know, maybe their perceptions will be different than mine. But there's a character in the book. I don't want to spoil him, but I think for me, the character in the book that really sums up my favorite part about where I grew up would be Mr. Stevens. He is a farmer, and he sort of embodies, I think in fiction, for me at least, my characters are sometimes the worst versions of people or the very, very best versions of people. And he's, for me, the very, very best version of what I would consider to be a very Midwestern person. And he does something really selfless. He asks for nothing in return. He harbors a secret. He is sort of this guy that is very no-nonsense and gets done what needs to be done, doesn't need to take any credit for it. And that, for me, I think, I don't know, that embodies some of my favorite things about the people that I grew up with.
Well, it was a really fun read, and it's been a real pleasure to talk to you, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much.
Elizabeth Likeness, her fourth novel is The Lost Queen of Crocker County. Elizabeth grew up in Iowa, and the protagonist in her new novel also grew up in Iowa. Her book tour will bring her back home to Iowa. She'll be at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City coming up on July 22nd at 4 p.m. Again, the book is The Lost Queen of Crocker County. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll meet Alejandro Larias Mora. He's a PhD pathology resident at Iowa State University's College of Veterinary Medicine. And the story of how he got to this point, his journey as an immigrant to the United States, his journey through education, is fascinating. We'll talk with him in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.